This podcast was produced on the lands of the Bunurong, Wurundjeri and Gadigal peoples of the Kulin and Eora Nations. The Pierce Project wishes to acknowledge them as the traditional owners. We would also like to pay our respects to their elders, past, present and emerging.
Welcome to Peers, a podcast by BIPOC founders for BIPOC founders. I'm Michelle Akidnor, proud biracial Australian and Forbes 30 Under 30 lister, and I'm your host and fellow peer. Join me for soul-enriching conversations with like-minded young BIPOC entrepreneurs from around the globe. Each week, I dive deep into the personal journey of my award-winning guests and unpack who they really are at their core and how they got started in business. With every episode, my mission is to empower you, expand what you think is possible, and hopefully make you feel less alone as a person of colour in business. Thank you so much for being here, peers. Hey peers, and welcome to this week's episode, episode 250 of Peers Podcast. Oh my goodness, what a milestone. You know, as some of you may know, I'm currently preparing to take the Peers Project global and service clients in the US. This has been such a long-term dream of mine, literally since I started this very podcast 6 years ago. I have been dreaming up heading to New York City to launch the business. You know, it's finally happening. And as you can imagine, there are so many moving pieces as we prepare to scale up. And, you know, one of those things is actually around financials, the ability to be able to invoice clients from the US through the Australian business. And it's so funny, I've been looking into a few different providers and companies out there that can allow for this kind of borderless financial capability. And one of those companies that I came across, you know, we had a bit of a chat, you know, and one of the first things they said to me actually was something along the lines of, oh my goodness, you know, it's so great to connect and it's just so beautiful to see someone with a diverse background, you know, in your position doing what you do. And I mean, it was just so lovely to hear. And it really stood out to me that, you know, these people clearly have conversations with different founders and CEOs and business owners every single day to sell their product. And yet we really stood out because I am a BIPOC founder and because I am different. And this is really what today's episode is all about. So today in episode 250, I sit down with fellow BIPOC founder and Forbes 30 Under 30 lister, Raina Montoya. Inspired by Raina's lived experience of being an undocumented immigrant, she founded Aliento, a community organization that supports students and families impacted by the inequities of lacking an immigration status through educational initiatives, leadership development, and policy and advocacy. In 2022, Aliento was instrumental in the passing of Proposition 308, a policy endorsed by Barack Obama that now allows undocumented immigrants who graduate from an Arizona high school to receive in-state tuition for college. Absolutely massive. So in our chat today, Raina opens up and she talks about the benefits of getting to know yourself on a deeper level, how we can get better at conquering self-doubt and navigating the barriers that arise from being different. Before we dive in to this episode, please do hit subscribe if you haven't already. If you're new to the show, welcome. We're so happy to have you. Please do follow us and jump over to Instagram also. We're at The Peers Project for more content and more updates on these episodes. I so appreciate your endless support, peers. Honestly, I wouldn't be here 6 years later still doing this if it weren't for you, for those of you who have tuned in for many years now, and for those new listeners as well. And so I love you all. Without further ado, peers, take a listen to episode 250.
My name is Reina Montoya, and I am the founder and CEO at Aliento. So Aliento is a Spanish word for breath. But when you give Aliento to someone, it's like giving words of encouragement. So that's my official title, but I've been doing this for a little bit over 7 years. But I come from lived experience growing up undocumented in Arizona in the United States and having to face a lot of barriers myself that really impacted my mental health, but also the opportunities that I was able to seek due to my lack of immigration status. So as a young person, I started doing community organizing in college, and I really wanted to be able to really have a space where lived experience and impacted folks are really at the front and center of decision making, because my experiences were that typically a lot of people want to hear a story, but not our strategy. So my whole mission has been about how do we really ensure that our young people who are so brilliant and so talented are not only at the front and center, but they're the storytellers and strategists of their own lives. So that's a lot about the work that we do at Aliento. We do it through different ways, but it's really coming from that place of truly believing that our young people are so brilliant, they're so powerful. What would it look like if we were to co-create a place where the human potential is nurtured, but not determined or defined by immigration status?
So powerful. Wow. Reina, you know, for you, what was it like growing up in Arizona in the States, undocumented, and how did this impact you at that age and the choices that you've made in your life and in your career so far?
It's so multifaceted. As a little kid, you don't constantly be thinking about how the lack of documentation is going to impact your life. It's just kind of one of those things that you experience and you're like, oh, I'm different. And I think that my early memories were when we first had to migrate in the first place. We had an internal migration within Mexico. That's the country where I was born. And everything was so confusing. I was only 10. Everything happened so rapidly. My mom came, picked me up, and that was the last time that I saw my teachers and my friends with no explanation. So as a 10-year-old, of course, I'm human. I build resentment towards my parents for not knowing and understanding. And all that resentment not only was transformed into understanding, but a deep sense of admiration years later where I learned why we migrated. I felt that all my life, I have been missing this big piece of my puzzle that I was able to find out that my dad, unfortunately, was a victim of a crime and he was kidnapped by Mexican police that really pushed our migration. So every time that my dad would see police officers and he would get nervous, or every time that my parents would be overly protective and I was not allowed to go to my friends and have like a PJ party or be able to hang out, it made sense, right? If he had to endure so much tragedy and so much pain, no wonder why protection was the first instinct and being able to flee from the country that I'm definitely deeply connected in terms of culture and proud of that part of my ethnicity. And then yet there's a lot of pain and trauma that comes with that, of knowing that we couldn't remain in a place because it wasn't safe. So fast forward to my life in Arizona, it meant to being in my math class as soon as I graduated and thriving, and my math teacher saying, hey, you're bored, we need to put you in honors. And me not being allowed to be put in honors because in Arizona, there was an English-only law that it was very strict and rigid, that they would put us in block classes for 4 hours with other folks that were learning English, and that you had to do that. So there was these two messages that I was getting. One, that I wasn't going to be able to get opportunities if I didn't know the English language. And that also people doubted my intelligence. There was my teacher, my math teacher, who definitely didn't doubt me. But my English teacher was like, well, are you sure she can do it? And hearing those messages as a little kid definitely impacts you at the core, but you don't have the language or the explanations to articulate the feelings, the emotions, and sometimes the lack of confidence that you're able to build because of that result of people's perceptions. So that was, I would say, like my first heartbreak. So I learned pretty quickly that in the United States, I needed to learn English fast and did my best as a student, went on and did really well in high school. And again, come senior year and everybody applying for colleges, getting credit courses for colleges, and I had to pay 3 times more than my peers. So definitely, again, another layer of seeing how me being different or not having immigration status was going to be a big barrier in my life. And I always think and reflect about what would have my faith would have been like without my parents. My parents did not graduate high school, and they have been the most supportive, brilliant, and the biggest cheerleaders in my life. That my mom and dad were, we don't know how you're going to go to college, but if that's your dream, we're going to make it happen. So I think both of that holding the duality and the complexity. In one hand, you have love and support from your household, and then on the other end, policies and laws that really are preventing me from thriving, and even people's stereotypes.
What was the greatest lesson that your parents taught you? They seem amazing.
It goes back to when I was a little kid, probably 5 or 7. I can't remember exactly, but it came from my dad. My dad is a very interesting man. He has been working since he was 8. He's an entrepreneur of his own. When my mom was pregnant of me, he was selling cassettes. If people don't even know what cassettes, that's the old way of playing music. But I mean, like going to that, I think my dad shared something with me that at that time I thought it was really gross. But he said, Reina, if you see people in the street, if they're wearing a tie or if they're having a groom and they're cleaning up, you better say good morning or good afternoon and greet them the same way, because at the end of the day, they all go to the restroom and do the same thing. And I was like, Dad, you're so gross. You're so disgusting. But now, like hindsight, right, as an adult and growing up, I'm like, oh, those are very wise words, because at the end of the day, we're all human and we should be treated the same regardless of our class or gender or ethnicity. And I think that that was a very important and valuable lesson that I still carry until today.
Oh my goodness, Reina, I'm taking it all in, and I'm sure our peers out there listening are too. Your story is just fascinating. If we go back to when you mentioned that you weren't able to get some opportunities, or you felt that you were almost held back because you were undocumented, you know, how did you navigate through those challenges? I guess we all experience it in some way, but feeling inadequate and like we're not enough. For you, how did you navigate through that? And for our peers out there listening who maybe feel like they're not enough, not in this exact context, but maybe in others, what advice would you have for us?
I would say that that little voice of constantly hearing that no matter what I do, it's never good enough, really pushed me to thrive in so many different components of my life. I mean, I was that student taking 21 credits in 4 years. I graduated with a double major and a minor, which in one hand you can see, wow, that's extraordinary. That's amazing. And the other hand, it came with a lot of pain and a lot of this fear of just sitting with and not appropriating my worthiness to what I could produce, or like I needed to prove something. When in reality is that, yes, ambition and having high goals and aspirations is so critical. When at the same time, we have to reflect and think about at what cost and why we're doing it. Because the problem is not the goal. The problem is not striving for excellence. The problem is what is the motive behind it. And if we're doing it to prove our worthiness, I think that that can be a really rocky stage in life. So many years later, right, I'm not that college kid anymore. I have a lot of scars in my back and a lot of lessons. And one of the piece of advice, or maybe just share through my story. And if anything, with advice, I always like to take it as a funnel. If something speaks to you and to your heart, hopefully it serves you. But if not, it's okay for you to funnel it. What I would say is that going back to why are you taking the actions you're doing today? I think that that's really critical to understand your own motives and knowing that there's a unique worthiness of us being human. And I think that is so much more powerful to lead with love and curiosity than to live with fear and shame. So that's my advice, to really not be afraid of that inner voice and interrupt it. When you're hearing that you're not good enough, try to interrupt it with five things that you're grateful for and with five things that you know that you're loved and that you're seen. And if you can get there, think about what are those five things that are going to give you joy or are going to give you peace. So then you can reframe that motive and really tap into that heart space.
Such great advice. At what point for you do you think you had that shift? You know, you mentioned that you realized you were just driven or motivated maybe by the wrong things or just to prove your worth. I 100% identify with that. You know, it's a huge part of the reason, you know, I think so many of us try to achieve. But, you know, at what point for you did that switch? You went from, wow, I'm understanding now that I'm doing this because I feel like I'm just not good enough or to prove, and that switch to, wow, I actually believe I'm worthy and these are the goals that I'm still going to pursue.
Yeah, I think for me, there were two moments that I can think of. I feel I was navigating, trying to quiet that voice of not feeling good enough and also wanting to ensure that my parents' sacrifices were worth it. As children of immigrants, I think that many folks can relate to that, or first-generation college graduates, knowing that sometimes your parents who come from humble beginnings had to sacrifice so much for you to make it, whatever that means, that I think it puts an amount of pressure in your shoulders. And I think that I thrive and I did really, really well in many aspects of my life, from graduating at the age of 21 with two majors and a minor, from running national and local campaigns when we were able to push the president of the United States to make the DACA program a reality, to then being able to push him again and ensuring that that was going to be extended to parents. I then got into the classroom and I taught high school Spanish, philosophy, dance, and English. Again, the similar trend, right? And became cheer assistant coach. And I was dancing professionally for a modern contemporary dance all at once. And then I think I hit a moment in my life in my mid-20s, around 25, that I was just so sad. I would drive and I would start crying and I would utilize my mindfulness techniques from doing yoga, from doing dancing, from talking to friends, going on hikes, that it felt this level of emptiness and unfulfillment that really pushed me to inquire, why am I doing what I'm doing and what is the motive? And I made a commitment to myself at that moment that it's like, one, I deeply care about community. I deeply care about supporting my neighbor. And at the same time, I am part of the community. And the moment that my actions are starting to feel that I am acting as a sacrificial lamb, that's not a community that I want to be part of. I don't want to be a model for that for other younger kids that are going through similar backgrounds. So it was really doing the inner work. I got myself a really good therapist. And I was able to really not be afraid of holding that mirror in front of my face and inquiring my motives and inquiring the why. Why am I doing this? Am I doing this out of guilt or am I doing this out of love? And having that reframe has allowed me to set healthier boundaries. And, you know, I'm human too. I have ups and downs. I'm still working on those boundaries. I'm still working on asking the hard question of why. But I think it's a huge win just having that mindfulness practice and being reminded that I have choice and I have agency.
So powerful. How can we get better at understanding our why?
It's a lot of inner work. I think that for some people, it might be a spiritual practice. It might be journaling. It might be going to therapy. But I think that we live in a society that is instant gratification or go, 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 that sometimes we don't pause and think, am I really going to yoga because I enjoy it? Or am I going because my besties want to go and then I want to have brunch time with them? So I think that is hard. I'm not going to sugarcoat it and say that it's easy, but I think it's making that commitment to yourself. At the end of the day, you have to be very honest with yourself, because you can lie to people, you can lie to your best friend, your partner. We can even lie to ourselves. But if we're starting to feel dissonance, or we're starting to have these voices that we all hear in our head, crippling with our sense of doubt, with our sense of joy, I think that that's the moment that we need to pay attention, because there might be something that has been bothering us and we haven't taken the time to pay attention. I oftentimes think about those voices or those moments when you engage in self-betrayal, like that little pebble in your shoe, that, you know, if it's little enough, you can ignore it. But after days, if you keep having it, or after hours, let's don't even talk about days. Let's fast forward to 8 hours and you're wearing the same shoes with the same pebble, it's going to penetrate and it's going to create permanent damage. So how do we pay attention to those little pebbles in our lives when we're feeling like, that didn't feel that good? And maybe we pause and say, why? I think that that's how we can get better, to have that practice of self-inquiry at all times.
I just love that you're sharing this, Raina. I think, honestly, I wish I could note all of this down. I'm taking it all in. But I think, you know, even personally, it really touches me. I think I'm currently going through a period of trying to understand what my boundaries are, you know, trying to enforce them, but not be too forceful, trying to stay true to myself, but also appreciate that, you know, sometimes you do have to go the extra mile, or sometimes you do have to, you know, I guess, push up against your own boundaries that you've set, and you have to adjust them. And it's so challenging, honestly. Sometimes I just think, how am I still here? How am I still struggling with this? You know, whether it's in my personal life or, you know, with the business. But, you know, for me and for our peers out there listening who are just kind of knee deep in getting to know themselves on that really intimate level and understanding what our boundaries are, where we feel comfortable, where we don't, what's been your experience with that? And what's your advice for us around that?
For me, there was a very important reframe that I had to do around boundaries, because when I first started my journey, I was very rigid. And I like the fact that you talk about rigidity. When our boundaries have been violated, the first tendency or reaction, and this is just like human behavior, you want to create walls, walls for protection. So I have a very loving partner that I am really grateful for, because he calls it how it is. And he's like, you're being so rigid. And I had a lot of conversations with my therapist to unpack that. But it was about that boundaries are supposed to be flexible and malleable, because yes, there are ones that are firm, right? But not every single one needs to be that way. And the hope with life is that we evolve and we change. And that's the only thing that we have certain, that there will always be change and we need to manage it. We can avoid it. We can prevent it. We just have to manage it. So I think that having that reframe that boundaries are flexible, having a reframe around the only constant thing in life is change, and having another very specific guidance in this journey that I can forgive myself, because I will make mistakes, because life is not a destination. Being good at boundaries or being good at your business or being good at fill in the blank. It is a constant journey. It is a practice. It's something that you constantly have to be making that choice. That is not something that I learned, I've mastered, and I've arrived. So I think that having that framework and practicing self-forgiveness and being able to shift, like, yeah, I didn't make the best choices yesterday. I still stayed until 2 a.m. in the morning because I was working on that budget for the business. And tomorrow is a different day and I can make a different choices as long as I am breathing in this earth.
Such valuable advice. I want to talk a bit about your organization, your business. You know, you alluded to some of the wins you had, but I want to kind of fast forward. I mean, 7 years is a long time. I just have to say, hats off to you when you're in this game. That is a very long time. But, you know, recently in the last couple of years, what have been some of those boundaries? And I guess those shifts and those changes you've had to make as your business has grown and evolved?
We're going through a very challenging moment as the organization because we just came out of a huge victory. We won in-state tuition in the state of Arizona for Dreamers. So little kids like me, they don't have to cry thinking that college is out of reach because of their immigration status. So that's been a huge victory. And with any high peak moments or campaigns, the body retreats and the body reacts in different ways. So I think for us, we're stepping into a new season of Aliento. There's a lot of pressure about what is the next thing. And I think for us, it's been able to do our best to pause and to reflect about what is serving us, what is not serving us. We also are going through a different seasonality where a lot of people join us when we were like a very scrappy organization, very coming from the beginning. Now we're in a different moment where we need more systems, more internal communication, more practices, because it's not the same to huddle with three people and figure out next steps than having a team of 12 or team of 30. So I think that in this new phase, it's really being able to reset and realign for our team to be able to allow this growth to have enough of a container to hold all the aspects of growth. And growth is not fun. It's not pleasurable. And it hurts. And it hurts sometimes. So I think for us, it's like from the outside, if you're seeing, right, like there's been so many victories. Our students are rocking it. They're owning their voice. We have had so many incredible opportunities. And then yet it's as an organization, is this growing pains and trying to honor that journey and being like, okay, I might not see the light at the end of the tunnel now, but this is critical for me to pause and pay attention and listen to see what do we need as a team or who are the new people that we need to bring on board in our team to really face this new season of Aliento.
I so resonate with the growing pains and the emphasis on the word pain because it is so painful. And, you know, we're currently going through something similar here at TBP. But, you know, as the founder, how do you show up during these times? Again, I've really struggled with that external validation that your business is now getting, that you kind of get after the first 5 years or 7 years, but then reconciling that with where we're actually at practically on the back end. It's so tough. I mean, I was literally in a meeting yesterday, actually, with my two consultants. And I walked away and I thought, oh my goodness, I feel like I'm in year one all over again. How is this happening? You know, so I guess my question to you is, how have you gone about reconciliation just within yourself of we've got these amazing wins, but now we're also going through this kind of intense growth period. And how have you kind of listen to yourself during this time?
I would say that I'm in the thick of it. I don't think I have arrived, or I don't know if I will arrive. Maybe I'll arrive for the next phase and then I'll have the same process all over again. It's so difficult and the pain is real, especially as a founder. You love this thing so much. You gave it birth and you're sharing it, and sharing it also is a journey. Like you're co-parenting with community. You're co-parenting with partners, advisors, donors. You have so many stakeholders. I think for me, what has been helpful in this journey is getting really practical, getting an executive coach, getting consultants that are going to help me troubleshoot, and also going back to key people that I can trust, that I know that they're going to call it how it is, that they're not going to sugarcoat it, and they're going to tell me with a lot of love. The honesty, because honesty is a form of love in my book, that sometimes it's easier to not share something that might not be working because you're afraid. And I think that we experience like a tough transition from other team members. But at the end of the day, I think for me, it's being able to be focused on my values. At the end of the day, I can control how people will show up. I can control if I do this action it would have a specific outcome. I can control how I respond to a situation, and I can control about how I go about it and the decisions that I make. So I think I'm trying my best in this difficult moment to remind myself that I am allowed to be human and to make mistakes, and that I will be making mistakes, and the mistakes are only devastated if I don't learn from them. And hopefully that as I am making decisions in a collaborative manner, but sometimes I just have to make the call because decisions and opinions are very in disalignment, or they come from very different angles, is reminding myself of my values and who do I want to be and how do I want to show up in this space. I think that that's been really critical. It has been a confusing journey, but having trusted folks that I can talk to, like my coach or my therapist, and being able really to decouple about, is this hitting like a prior trauma? Is this hitting a specific trigger? No, these are the actions I took, and maybe it's not my responsibility anymore. Like, I can only control what I do. And if people have issues and they don't come up to you, that's not mine to own. That's theirs. So that's been the hardest lesson as the oldest child and grandchild on both sides of my family. Like, not taking responsibility for things that don't belong to me has been hard. So a helpful reframe, it's like the way I have agency, they have agency too. And the way that I'm doing the work, they also need to, because communities, it takes all of us to do the inner work in order for us to be healthier and thriving. So that's what's helping me right now. And I have harder days than others and some lighter ones too.
Oh, we always enjoy and make the most of the lighter days, hey? I mean, we have to.
Yeah.
Oh, so true, Rena. I so appreciate that. Look, this has been just so insightful and interesting. And honestly, I feel like I could speak to you all day. But I am mindful of your time. So I have a couple of final questions for you. And the first one is, so this podcast is by BIPOC founders for BIPOC founders. So for you, and I know we've talked a lot about this today, but as a BIPOC founder, how has your culture helped or hindered you along the way?
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, coming from an immigrant background, having ethnicity rooted in Mexico and in China, I think that it's really complicated. Mexico also has multiple ethnicities. And then now growing up in the US, I think that that has been one of my superpowers, I would say, because it allows me to suspend judgment. It allows me to lead with curiosity. It allows me to understand that there's so much color in life besides black and white. So I think that that has really been a good reframe in this side of my career. And just as a human to be like, this is how I see it, but there's so much in the in-between space and in the color. Like, why do we have to fixate just with black and white? There's like browns and yellows and pinks, and reminding myself of that when I have strong feelings and conventions. I think that that's been the real challenge, but it's a great opportunity because one of our values at the organization is really rooted in an African proverb called Ubuntu, which it means that my humanity is bound to yours and your humanity is bound to mine. And a Mayan poem that it's called In Lakesh, which it means that you are my other me. So that really allows me to be grounded, especially when I'm working across differences, that if I want my humanity to be honored and uplifted, I have to model the same thing and I have to uplift the humanity of other people that I don't necessarily see eye to eye with.
Oh, so well said. Look, Rena, over the last 7 years since you started your business or organization, you've really gone from strength to strength, you know, in amongst all of the challenge, the hardship, there have been so many successes for you, and you were notably featured on the Forbes 30 to 30 list a while back now, but even still, that is how we found you. So what are three key pieces of advice that you would give our peers out there listening that you wish you got when you were just starting out?
I wish I would have heard that, one, what you do matters and how you do it matters as much. I would have loved to hear that building teams and building culture is essential for anybody's success, and how you bring people along really matters to make impact in this world. And then at the end of the day, things will be okay. Even if you make a mistake, you'll survive and you learn from it. So I wish I would have been told that. I would have been easier on myself.
Yeah, so true. Amazing. Oh my goodness, Rena. It's just been so, so cool to chat with you today. I appreciate you getting deep with us, you getting vulnerable about your journey, and you just holding a really safe space for us to listen and learn from you. And so I just want to take a moment before I ask you the final question to acknowledge you, Rena, for the incredible work you've done and you're doing, you know, for showing us, in particularly us young, ambitious, female BIPOC entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs-to-be, that if we have that vision, that goal and that dream, we can make it a reality, although it may be really tough, but we're worth it and we just have to believe that. And so for that, we really appreciate you.
Thank you, Michelle.
Of course. So the final question is how we finish every episode of the Peers Podcast, and that is, what is the value of pursuing what you're most passionate about?
For me, it's the great gift of living a purposeful life. That's a gift.
Oh, beautiful. Rena, thank you so much for coming on the show. It has been so, so amazing to chat with you. Where can we learn more about you and Aliento?
Well, because we are talking to millennials and Gen Zs, and you're our people, definitely catch us on all the social medias. We are on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. So definitely Instagram and TikTok are our most popular ones. So catch us there. And we also have a mailing list. We send them once a month for you to really see opportunities for you to get engaged or learn more. We really believe in the value of reciprocity. So it's give and take. So definitely sign up to our newsletter at our website, alientoac.org. And I promise we won't bombard you with information, but you'll get to become an ally and join us in our journey.
Oh, we love it. We'll link them up in the show notes. Thank you so much again. And for everyone else listening, we will end with that.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Peers. If you're liking what we're doing here and resonate with our mission of amplifying BIPOC founder stories, please subscribe, rate, and leave a review. Also, head over to our Instagram and follow us. We're at The Peers Project. And you can connect with me personally on LinkedIn and Insta. I'm at Mish Akidinor. I adore you oh so very much, Peers. Until next time.